Hello, humans. Welcome to Audio Face, the reverent podcast about the music news and music culture that mostly matters. I'm Dan.
I'm Sean.
On episode 221 of this fine podcast, we have three projects: Ghetto Gods by Earth Gang, unsponsored content by Salen Elise, and The Tipping Point by Tears for Fears.
Oh, sorry. Just the album name of what we were just going over is just beautiful. I totally forgot it was called Ghetto Gods.
Yeah. But before we went on the podcast, we found a, we started recording the podcast, we went on a website that just went deep into the rabbit holes of, American racism, as far as like what related to, housing and
redlining.
There's actually a website you can go to that I'll link in this music podcast about malls that you can go to and look at different maps in major cities and what they said about different zone districts and see if, like, if your neighborhood is as old as the 1930s, you can see what racist shit they may or may not have said about it. But anyways, we also have a smattering of news and one single review. We have a light track review. Remember, if you have tracks for us to review, send them to us at audiophase@syndicate23.co so we can listen to them, review them. We want to hear from big artists, little artists, just all around, all types of genres, except bro country. That's what we do on Audio Face. And so today we've got King by Florence and the Machine.
I need my golden crown of sorrow, my bloody sword to swing. I need my empty halls to echo in grand sales mythology, cause I am no mother, I am no bride, I am king.
So their first single, I believe, since their last album in 2018. I think they might have had one in 2020, but it was like a one-off. So Florence and the Machine have been around for quite some time. And we reviewed High as Hope in 2018. Genuinely fairly liked it for what it was. And that's crazy. That was 4 years ago. That makes me feel old. But anyways, King, it's a nice solid track. I like the presentation of it. It takes a little while to build for the track and whatnot. It's just like the first maybe about minute is a little bit, you know, quiet, but it just builds and builds, just like gets up, and it's like quintessential Florence and the Machine, but it's something that I won't ever really grow tired of, but I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too. I love the build up. I love the vocals when they're delivering the lines of King in the chorus. It's a really well produced track. I'm not sure if this is like a lead up to something or just like a one off. Probably knowing the way Florence and the Machine release things, maybe there's a project coming soon.
High as Hope. It's been a long time. Ago. Yeah. 2018. Yeah. It's been a minute.
Yeah. And overall it was very solid track. So like we said, if you have any things to send us, definitely send them our way. Audioface@syndicate23.co is the email. Audiofacepod on Twitter or Instagram is where you can reach out to us and send us music suggestions as well. We'll be posting more there soon to post all the videos that we are doing on our YouTube channel at youtube.com/audiofacepod. And you can support us with Syndicate 23 membership. You can get episodes early, like our State of Music 2022 conversation that we'll be dropping next week for members, and other things. You can help support what we do at join.syndicate23.co. A link is in the description. The 2022 playlist, which I still need help naming, we still need help naming, is also in the podcast description. You can get and follow all of our favorite songs of 2022 as the year is developing. And of course, thank you, Dead Music Productions, Peter at Dead Music Productions, for mastering this content and making it sound really nice. And if you're a musician who wants to have their music or other sounds mastered and sounding also really nice, check them out at deadmusic666 on Insta. So one of the biggest news stories of the week obviously had to do with the Russian invasion of Ukraine. This is not the politics show. We did a lot of coverage on Power Report that I encourage people to check out.
Awesome.
Yeah, thank you. Bam and I did that. Sean, you were joining in chat as well. I remember it was a really fun time. I really like doing that live interaction thing. But again, this is not the politics podcast, except for when music kind of intersects with that. And there's actually a little bit of a question as to whether or not Eurovision, which is a major like singing competition, basically like the American Idol of Europe, more or less, that has been happening for decades now, would continue to include Russia. And leading up to the invasion, and even during the first hours of the invasion, the Eurovision organizers held firm, and they were like, listen, we are above politics, and we don't want to, you know, have this impact any performers from, you know, performing on the world stage. You know, nevertheless, things have gotten pretty real in the Ukraine-Russia situation. There's hundreds of casualties and, you know, a lot going on. Again, not the politics podcast. I'm not going to go into too much of the details here. You can go into any of the details here. And I actually encourage people who just don't know much about the Russia-Ukraine situation to just be silent and listen to people who do, because not everything deserves a take or needs one. But turns out that the Eurovision organizers are changing their mind, and they say, in quote, in light of the unprecedented crisis in Ukraine, the inclusion of a Russian entry in this year's contest would not bring the competition into disrepute. A delightfully European way of saying that.
All right. Well, it's one way to deliver that.
Yeah. I don't want to joke about the matter, but it recalls of different, you know, situations like in sports where, with the Olympics especially, where there are questions over whether or not to include different, you know, whether or not to include different countries in sports because they've been accused of different things or their country's politics are different. It's been said the Olympics is supposed to be like above politics and above these things, but some of the stuff is a little bit hard to ignore, honestly. So I think Eurovision made a decent call there. But as we get deeper into actual music news this week, Kanye West, artist formerly known as, had a Donda 2 live event where he premiered Donda 2 in all of its unfinished, poor-sounding glory. And, you know, the lead-up to this album, as with all, like, Ye album rollouts, has been chaotic, ridiculous, self-effacing, makes Ye look bad, makes the people around him either feel sorry for him or also get caught in the crossfire and also look bad. But on February 22nd, he said that, like, okay, as I said or alluded to, as we covered on Audio Face last week, the Donda Stim player is going to be up on the internet so you can spend $200 essentially, or go to this website and spend money to access Donda 2, and that's basically the only way you'd be able to stream it as of right now. I highly doubt that with Kanye West's ego, he would make it so you can only stream it on his website. He's going to want it on Apple Music and everywhere else soon. But what people were able to listen to is, once again,
unfinished and bad.
Yes.
We told you so. It's going to be that way.
Yeah. The idea that Donda 2 would come out this quickly after, you know, Donda 1, which was already a scattered mess and chaotic and lacked focus, and that came out in August of last year, I remember. It seems to be a little bit shorter, but still very underwhelming. I think there's some production that's like, all right here. It's the same story with Kanye West. He hasn't changed in the artist in 5 or 7 years. Production's fairly solid, but he leaves much to be desired in rap skills or talent per se. All that's gone in like the first decade of the year of the 2000s, more or less, and what you have left is just a celebrity seeking attention.
Yeah, exactly. Donda 1 wasn't that great anyways as well. We had many issues with that. We expected to be a lot of unfinished demos, unfinished work, you know, and somebody who constantly goes into his, you know, music catalog and changes things last minute and constantly changes music all the time. It's like nothing is ever finished. Nothing's ever completely done. So it's hard to be a music reviewer and do that because, you know, in 6 months, this track might sound completely different. Like in Life of Pablo, that happened a ton of times too.
Yeah, one of my favorite songs, Life of Pablo, Feedback, got edited to be worse.
Yeah, I really like Feedback at the beginning, and now it's just, I don't like it.
It lacks the same kind of punch, the chaotic punch that, like, was kind of Kanye's best at that point. I will note one, it has a usual, like, you know, Pete Davidson digs, divorced dad energy. I will note there's one really interesting one where Ye samples Kim Kardashian's Saturday Night Live thing where Kim is about to say a joke that was written for her that says, I married the best rapper of all time. Not only that, he's the richest black man in America. And that part is sampled. The part that's left out is the punchline, which says, "So when I divorce him, you have to know it came down to just one thing, his personality."
It's not a good look there.
Anyways,
she's pathetic. It's just bad.
Yay, selectively editing clips. Anyways, we have Earth Gang's Ghetto Gods, 17 songs, 53 minutes long. And
53 minutes and 1 second.
1 second. Nice and tight. I've been waiting for, like, an Earth Gang project for a good minute. I don't think we reviewed Spilling Hyun, actually, because it was sort of like a... Yeah, because that was like a Spillage Village, like a big, like, random project with a bunch of other artists. I think we did Mirrorland, though, in 2019. That was, like, considered...
We definitely did do Mirrorland, for sure. Because you liked it a lot, and it's one of those albums that we reviewed that grew on me. It just took me a while to like it.
Yeah, I'm already remembering Proud of You with Young Thug, where I was actually one of the first songs that turned me to Young Thug, where I was like, okay, feature Young Thug is actually kind of interesting and varied and has something kind of going on here. Kind of a precursor to Pink, arguably. Punk, Pink, whatever that album was. and then you had, like, Trippin' by Kalani. Those were really good songs. But Earth Gang has done this really interesting thing of blending rap and just a lot of interesting parts of music as a whole, whether it is soul or whether it is funk or whether it is jazz or whether it's just, you know, like harder rap. And because of that, you've gotten some really interesting projects. I think one of my favorite Gorilla songs now is Opium with Earth Gang. It just has this nice build up to it. You get to see, like, Earth Gang, what they bring to a Gorilla's song, which already they're known for having such a variety of instrumentation in the production usually, that Earth Gang just takes up to like 11, honestly, like 21 even in that. So you get this album right here, which I think, you know, say for some blemishes here or there, is pretty good.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the album. The big thing with me with this album, you know, and trap albums, I tend to have issues with a lot of features, or like sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. I actually like the features a lot on this record. So you have the opening, The Glow, which is a little prelude track into the title track of Ghetto Gods. And Ghetto Gods, I think, is like a nice, like, solid, clean, wholesome trap, as we like to say in Audio Face, where it's like, it's everything I like in a trap song. It's nothing like overly fantastic, but it gets you into the album of exactly what you're going to get into. Then you have Billy with featuring Future. It's always hard to say featuring Future. But actually, I like Future's part in here. And you know me, I'm a certified Future hater. But I didn't mind that part. And then I really liked Water Boys with Jid and J. Cole. I thought J. Cole's part was really good towards the end. I've been in the Crown V, in the Mercury. Push the 300 like a Bentley. Niggas ain't nothing if they ain't with me.
Me, I've been laying low, keeping this shit from a distance and checking this chicken, no GMOs. These niggas look rich, but they broke, I be playing pole. Please don't get it fucked up from this homeless aesthetic. Whole lot of homes, and I ain't even put up the tour, but it's sold out already. I'm General Sal, how a nigga is bred, and I'm getting it now.
You know, almost Not a Little Bitch, like 47,000 different times, J. Cole. I really like his flow on it. He's done a couple different things with Earth Gang. I believe they had a track on Revenge of the Dreamers 3 as well. So they've done a few collaborations between the three of them, since Earth Gang's a duo. And then you had a lot of like these little skits in between throughout the record, which actually I ended up liking, because it was more of a storytelling thing going into the track on certain ones. Sometimes I felt like it could get a little much, but like example, in the middle of the album, you have the Jeans interlude skit, then you get right after that, you get right into Black Pearls featuring Baby Tate. And that I really like the way that went into the next track. So sometimes skits can work, sometimes they can't. And I think here is like 70-30. Most of them work. There's maybe one or two here that I thought just made the album go a little too long for it. But other than that, I really actually enjoyed this album. Later on, for me, like towards the middle of it, I like Black Pearls, Neezy's Walk, featuring Lene Vinay.
Yeah, Black Pearls was a really interesting track I found as well. Stars aligning, prices climbing. Shawty got a new body. Pussy got a new lining.
rhyming. Can't live no vegetable life. Tryna get my dick sucked for the rest of my life. Shawty got a big butt and she all in my face. We be going all night.
It was sort of like this, you know, like, it takes a really typical, like, spin on a lot of, like, trap tropes, but does it in a very Earthgang-y way that I thought was really fun. I think I've seen a similar kind of thing done with artists like IDK, but yeah. One track, like, I don't know if I want to, like, skip ahead too much, but American Horror Story was actually end up being one of my favorites on there.
Bitches can't fuck with me. What about the police? Come in my crib and shoot me up. Life hard enough, just think about rent. Could about my freedom, all the money I spent. Yeah. Ain't that some shit? Yeah. I mean, for real, all this money we got and we still can't help Flint, yeah. Don't get me wrong, I still pull up the land, it's a floss on the beach, yeah. But I hate seeing my niggas get shot up, that shit don't make sense, yeah. Goddamn, I could help you if you stop tripping so much. Baby girl, I can't save you, but I can sure lift you up. Left cheek, right cheek.
Because it was like, it did that nice thing of Earthgang being, you know, slightly, vaguely political and aware, but no way hitting you over the head with it. Because there's a lot of, like, deep topics in there, but it's not too, like, you know, annoying with it. I think it's definitely not gonna be like one of the top play tracks on the album by any means, but I really appreciate the, like, the art that was able to put in there when you have an album that's full of a bunch of bangers as well.
Yeah, the thing too with American Horror Story and stuff towards the end of the album, you get a lot of experimentation towards the end of the record as well, where you have a lot of different beats, a lot of different ideas, some stuff with, like, electronic beats or robot video game beats, as we like to say, and some ideas where the track will slow down and, like, the beats and stuff might not actually mesh well with the vocals. They're kind of, like, off kilter, but it works in that way. So, like, you have Smoke Some and Strong Friends, which are two of them where I could kind of hear that word, like, especially Strong Friends, like, the way the drums and stuff would kind of pause, they had, like, this overlaying effect with it, but it wouldn't really match the vocals, but it was had this cool effect that worked. I mean, sometimes if you try a lot of stuff like that where it's off kilter, it won't be pleasant to the ears, but these ones very well. I think that goes to show you that, you know, Earthgang, they're very good at what they do. They're good at, you know, blending a lot of different genres, blending a lot of different ideas that they have, and being able to put a really concise and cohesive project together with that. But still, you know, having your bangers, right? You have Black Pearls, you have Waterboys, Billy, you have these tracks that are like, that hit you and go, you know, go really hard. But then also you have a lot of experimentation here, which is what I appreciate. And that's what started to get me really to like this album. So on my second listen through, I was like, I really got to enjoy it because of that. Because, you know, you get, you know, your forever trapped scale of why be better, why be not better, why be not better. Because, you know, you have these 8-hour trap albums that just give you the same hook 48 times in a row. But these tracks are totally different. Like, if you go to Strong Friends, to American Horror Story, to Waterboys, they are all three of those are all very differently sounding tracks, but they also belong on the same record together. So I like it a lot. It's the first trap album I've really liked in a long time on Audio Face. So
yeah. The one thing I noted in here was there's an interesting choice to have the song Power with CeeLo Green and Nick Cannon, which, like, when you read into the song topically, it's sort of like this sort of like these people are defiant based on, like, the things that have come towards them. And you read into, like, you know, CeeLo Green's sort of like Me Too-ish kind of thing, and then Nick Cannon's just sort of general behavior with, like, his lives and his, like, wives and his, all that different stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It sort of comes off with that sort of, like, Dave Chappelle defiantness, where, like, I don't care that I'm annoying people, I'm just going to assert that I'm correct kind of deal. Or, like, I don't care that I'm, like, impacting another person, I'm just going to, like, assert that I'm correct and I'm right kind of deal. This sort of, like, you get this with a lot of celebrities. I think you see it with Ye, honestly. And so I thought that was, like, a weird addition thematically. But, like, you also had really great tracks. Like, I thought the Future one was, I was like, it wasn't like a Baby Keem track where in the middle there's, like, a switch and the song is totally different. But the switch was really chill and integrated really nicely and wasn't overdone, just really integrated really through. And then ending with Run 2 with Ari Lennox, which it's a nice track to end on, and it has a nice long tail at the end to like exit the track. Really good.
Yeah. I forgot about Power, because when I saw, like, CeeLo Green, Nick Cannon, I'm like, what the fuck? Like, that's a Kanye West, DaBaby and Marilyn Manson right there. No, I'm not as extreme, but I was like, CeeLo Green is like, shit, I haven't heard him in a long time.
Yeah.
For reasons.
Right. So, Arbitrary Scale, this good album. Arbitrary Scale this week is Donda 2 STEM Players. I'm so glad we settled on that Arbitrary Scale compared to some of the other ones we were thinking of. We do Arbitrary Scales every single week on Audio Face because our review is our review. What we said about the album is what we said about it, and we think it was, you know, logical and tells you our opinions about that album, but we'll give you a ranking system because, you know, Pitchfork exists and everyone else uses a ranking system of some kind, but we're not going to give you one that makes sense, because why? This time it's going to be Donda 2 STEM Players, More is Worse. I'm going to give this like a half-working Donda STEM player that only plays like the bass and the drums. No vocals, so it's just the production. And so Ye can't possibly mess it up. If he does mess it up, he can always just turn off one of the features.
This is a Donda STEM player that somehow gets circumvented to Tidal, and then you're playing Jay-Z. I don't think it works like that, but we'll leave it. That's why it's an arbitrary scale.
That'd be really funny. You start messing with your Donda player, and it's like, Hall. Hall. All right.
It just goes, Tom Ford, Tom Ford.
Beyonce, where's the pants? All right.
Deadass.
Remember, you can help grow Audio Face by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Audio Face Pod. Check out the most recent Power Report episode, my Warpath on leftists to defend Joe Rogan. And PowerReport.world. is the website, which may or may not work right now, redirect to something, but just go to youtube.com/danfromtheinternet and you'll get all the stuff there. We now get into more news and to the Hot Girl and Associates legal corner, because Megan Thee Stallion has been getting hard in the paint when it comes to the court. And so we have an update of some sorts in the Megan Thee Stallion Tory Lanez case. And, you know, there's been a lot of posturing on either side in this case. You know, this turns back to in the year 2020 when there was an alleged altercation where Megan Thee Stallion is accusing Tory Lanez of shooting her in the feet. Or in the foot. And then Tory Lanez has since denied all this, and they've been gone into like a legal battle. There was originally a tweet that none other than DJ Academics posted and then deleted, saying that Tory Lanez's trial just adjourned until April, with Tory's lawyer telling the court they've completed DNA results from the prosecution, which is very pleasing to his client. And basically says that it's inconclusive in finding Tory's DNA on the gun or the magazine. That's like one side of how, like, you know, Tory Lanez's defense is talking about these things. Meanwhile, the LA County District Attorney's Office sounded confident in their case, saying, quote, although we are legally prohibited from commenting on the evidence and will continue to abide by the obligation, our office is under an ethical duty to only proceed on charges which we believe we can prove beyond a reasonable doubt and which have already been upheld by a judge after presentation of evidence at the preliminary hearing. We believe the evidence substantially supports the charges and allegations, and the evidence will be borne out in court. So there's a lot of tough talk coming from both sides here as well. It's not like the district attorney's office, who is acting on behalf of Megan Thee Stallion in this case, is saying, oh no, the DNA evidence looks like they got us. Apparently they have enough evidence that they feel will be able to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Tory Lanez shot Megan Thee Stallion in the foot, at least what they feel that they can prove. We will see how that goes through, because, I mean, this has definitely been a really interesting case.
Yeah, Daystar Peterson's fucked.
It's seeming like it.
Yeah.
And then also in the legal corner, we have Megan Thee Stallion suing her label again over the definition of an album. And this is something that I think is going to be a precursor to our State of 2022 music conversation. Because we did this a little bit when Audio Face began, and we just kind of said, screw it, we're going to review products, whatever we do. This week we're going to be reviewing an EP in addition to reviewing albums, so like you'll see how that goes. But the definition of an album versus a mixtape, and how certain artists, certain fans want to be judged differently based on how that works, has been a really interesting topic as of late. And one how that is also played out is how labels will start to you know, label what is an album versus what is a mixtape when it comes to the obligation of an artist to complete a certain number of albums in their contract. So you sign with a label oftentimes early on in your career, and it's like the label's like, okay, bet, give us 4 albums, and then your contract's over, in addition to other things you have to abide by. And usually it's a big deal when artists are able to get off of these label contracts. They usually hate them. They want to go independent afterwards. You get a lot more of their say. It's just like the Tied and Two story. I think Charlie XCX is only recently getting out of her own label contract. So these things.
And you had the thing with Lil Wayne too about the Carter Five, and just the nightmare it was just to get that released. You have, I mean, it's tons and tons of stories of this. What's it's interesting is they are saying, you know, her label, 1501 Certified Entertainment, is saying that that they refuse her to allow to fulfill the terms of her contract, to claim that her last full length Something for the Hotties doesn't qualify as an album. The thing that's with that is, you know, her Something for the Hotties came out in October, late October of last year. And then Good News came out in 2020. They're both about the same length. They're, you know, 45, 50 minutes close to, and they have plenty of tracks. So don't know what they mean by that. Like, it's insane that Something for That Salon, because you have, you know, Sugar, which came out in 2020, which was probably only, what, 20 minutes? Like, that's a drop.
It's like 30 minutes. That's a drop.
Yeah, it's like 30. Like, that's a drop, right? But those other ones, like, those are, you know, 45, 50 minutes. Like, those are, you know, Radiohead releases, you know, LP10. That's what's, you know, 45, 50 minutes is what you're going to get. And we're going to call it an LP, right? It's just, that's stupid that it doesn't count. But, you know, labels would try to, you know, manage their way to fuck something.
So the key issue is, well, first of all, one thing I think the label's doing, which is pretty lame, is that they are, like, it's pretty, like, bad to say. I guess, like, you shouldn't say lame, but, like, it's a dumb thing they're doing. Arguably dumb is bad in that case, too. But, you know, it's not a good idea for them to be doing this. Is they are arguing that because Something for the Hotties is, you know, some singles, some B-sides, and it's, like, basically they're describing it as loose singles and B-sides, unlike a mixtape where she would be, like, rapping over other artists' beats. So, like, that's a weird definition. And, like, okay, where mixtape has to be you are rapping over other artists' beats, which, like, happens in mixtapes for sure. Definitely it's harder to happen in albums. But ultimately, like, you have artists get, like, you have samples in mixtapes, you have samples in albums. I think that's a very arbitrary definition. More on that in the music conversation. But I think, yeah, you have that right. Both albums are about the same amount of length. Both of them are original works, or, like, original-ish works from Megan Thee Stallion, and she's rapping over them. Like, I get really kind of touchy when a label tries to arbitrarily put a, you know, a label or a marker of some kind on an artist's work and how that has to be presented and showing, because sure, maybe it could be a drop, but I think it could totally be an album. But bigger issue here, like, bigger context, is this is the third time that Meg Thee Stallion and her label have been in these kinds of lawsuits.
Yeah.
So
insane.
Yeah, an attorney for 1501 denies the allegations, claiming to Billboard that, quote, the label told her from the very beginning that this is not going to count towards your album count. She can't just deliver us an album that we did not approve of and then claim it satisfies her recording contract. Whereas Meg Thee Stallion is saying that they retroactively said, oh no, this can't count as an album anymore. So that's kind of a question up for debate, but, like, all I can do is compare this to all the cases out there where artists hate their original signing labels and they, like, want to do everything they can to get off of them. Sometimes artists do creative ways of doing that, but I don't think, like, I definitely think Something for the Hotties is one of those edge cases.
Yeah. It's just... I definitely want to branch further on this in our State of the Music Industry, because I have a lot of interesting ideas, but that'll be like an hour-long conversation on this. So this is not going to be the last we hear of these kinds popping up for sure, 100%. It's going to be more of this happening.
For that full episode, make sure you become a Syndicate 23 member at join.syndicate23.co, where we will dissect different genres in the music industry right now, what they're like. We do this every single year, and it's a really fun conversation to check in and go, okay, how are these genres progressing? Are they progressing? What's new for them? Or what are we going to pay attention more towards now? It's sort of like a State of the Union, kind of, but for music. Anyways, make sure you check that out. We move on to our second project review of the week. It is Unsponsored Content by Salem Elise. It is an EP that is 6 songs long that is mostly releases that have come out from Salem Elise over the past couple of, months or so. It's just, one of those indie releases where, it's, like an indie artist, they release a song and then eventually those songs make it onto a larger EP. But those songs have already largely been released. However, putting it together in this EP gives it the opportunity to package them in some way for a newer audience. That's how I'm and a lot of other music reviewers are able to see this stuff. And you get some pretty decent, if not it's good if not trying to push the boundaries indie pop.
It's definitely indie. It's indie pop for sure. It's that certified Zed territory of mushy TikTok hooks, as I like to call it. So it's okay. The tracks are all pretty short and concise for it. And the thing I like with them, with the tracks, is all of them are play on words and play on, stuff in modern day life. Ben and Jerry is, plays of talking about ice cream, but has different connotations and it doesn't necessarily mean that. Ben and Jerry, to think my family wonders why I'll never marry. When every night I'm a good Curtis only makes my heart start hurting. I go home to pack a bowl with Ben and Jerry. I tell Ben. It's cool. I like the way she does her lyrics with that. The production is a little lackluster for me, where it's just, especially with Ben and Jerry, Hey Siri, some of those they're a little bland for me, where I've heard this production plenty of times with a multitude of different artists. But I think a big thing too is some of these tracks did come out a year or 2 years ago. Meta Disney came out, I think in 2020, I believe, when I first heard it. So some of these, are a little bit older with that, so you can kind of get that context for the way that they sound. But it's a decent effort for what it is. PS5, I thought, was actually a pretty decent track. Tell me which of us is more your type. Seems like you can't decide. So if it's not me, then I'm probably gonna run it over. Interesting how she tried to put a Latin beat into it. But yeah, it's okay overall.
Yeah, I agree. Every single song on here is such pop zoomer beat. Jake from State Farm, which is end up being sort of a love song and has references to khakis in it. There's Hey Apple Voice Assistant that I'm not going to trigger on people's phones right now. But it uses that name. And these are things that are meant to, it's cool to actually talk about this because a lot of people don't realize that in song creation, one way you can think about song creation is, okay, what will appeal to most people in a poppy sense? When Gunna was creating Push and Pee, it's a little bit of a ridiculous thing, especially in retrospect, but it's marketing brilliance because exactly. Now it's a term that people are using. It's all over the place, right? Yeah. And so you can create terms if you have that level, or you can take things that already exist and make them your own, kind of like a lot of what Salem Elise does here. And I think that could be kind of part of it is what she likes to do is taking different tracks and songs like this and then taking these tropes as they exist and then giving her own spin, her own style to them. And in a really tastefully indie pop way. I do feel that, more State of Music 2020 conversation. 2022 conversation, I mean, I do feel like this indie pop genre has like had its moment right now,
yeah,
like already. And it's starting to get like, okay, you have a lot of artists who are jumping in doing a lot of the same stuff. We need what makes indie great, which is variety. And at least from some of this EP, I see, you know, some possibility to be there. It's 6 songs. It's like 13 minutes long. I'm not going to say, oh, she can't do variety. She can't do range. But I would like to see more of that going forward.
Yeah, well, it's like, I guess I get really disappointed with the indie pop category because you have, you know, Surface's Conan Gray, where their latest projects I did not like at all because I just thought they were very generic and boring and just were pretty flat with the way their the whole projects came out on those two records. But with that, yeah, you definitely need a little bit more innovation. And to me, it's like, as I said before, a lot of the tracks that are on unsponsored content came out, you know, either last year or even 2 years ago. So, you know, they were really encapsulating a sound that was at that time, even though it's only, you know, a year or 2 years past. But within there, you're creating an aurora of sound that is for like a really specific time, and it can date itself pretty quickly. I think that's an issue that a lot of younger musicians are going to have to face and to figure out of how to not get stuck and how to get out of it. But that's something that I will get more into on our State of Music Industry talk as well. But overall, I thought it's a decent effort. It'd be interesting to see what she does in the future, see if she continues that sound or if she changes it into some other work, which I hope she does. So I actually really like her voice, and she has some really good ideas, and some of the tropes are fun. So I like that, where I like things being on the nose. So want her to make a full LP and see what that full LP sounds like from her. So,
yeah, and of course in India, a full LP is like 29 minutes, but you know,
right? We'll still be maybe down. 35, 40 minutes tops.
40 minutes in India is a double album,
right? That point.
Anyways, arbitrary scale this week. We do arbitrary scales every week on Audio Face because our review matters more than a ranking system. That's a nice, concise way of saying it. I might do that more often. Donda 2 stem players. I'll give this one Donda stem player, but you can only hear the guest vocalist. You cannot hear Kanye, so it's still solid, but you only hear the guest vocalist, which makes it kind of poppy.
This is a Donda stem player that just has jail on repeat from Donda 1 stuck. So all you're hearing is, guess who's going to jail tonight the whole time. That's it.
Oh, man. I'm just going to be safe and segue to something different. I guess there's no escaping Ye, but Tool has become the latest to, you know, I guess disrespect Ye and Travis Scott and join the likes of Billie Eilish and Skeet Davidson and Kid Cudi to, you know, be on team, help fans who are hurting during concerts.
How is this even like a team? How is this a pick sides thing? It's beyond absurd to me.
Are you pro or anti helping people who are having trouble at concerts? It's so nuts. Anyways, Maynard James Keenan of Tool stopped a performance in Washington, D.C. To make sure that medics could attend to a fan in distress. Basically, a lot of artists lately have started to, like we said, make it a point to make sure that they can stop shows and help artists, or like help people who might be going through like physical issues during the event, like whatever's going on that may need medical attention, to not just make the shows go on or encourage the shows to be more intense, which are some of the things that are stemming from the Astroworld tragedy that happened, and some of the things that are being alleged in the piling lawsuits that are happening as a result of that, saying that, or alleging that Travis Scott was purposely like hyping up the crowd. That's stuff that he does in his shows typically. Uh-huh. And that he didn't do enough as an artist to step into that. So basically many other artists in the music industry, yay be damned, are making it say like, no, we want the music industry, especially as live concerts are coming back. And quite frankly, people don't know how to behave themselves outside again. As live concerts are coming back, we want to make sure that these concerts are safe places for people and that people feel they mm-hmm. can bring others there, because mm-hmm. it's a business thing, but also like it's a humanity thing.
I mean, hell, Damon Albert did it when Del the Funky Homo Sapien yeeted off stage, so you know.
Yeah, I think you definitely have to stop a show when one of your performers is injured.
You okay, bro?
Don't tell anyone from the LA Rams. Did you see the video? That one, I forget, Cooper Kupp or something like that. He just like turned the other way as this reporter fell and like broke her spine.
He's just like, I'm out.
She's like,
yikes. He just straight up like, he like, it's one of those things where you're about to lose the game and you just like, oh, my connection failed, but you just hard quit the game. That's what he did.
It's like when you're playing beer pong and you do something stupid. So instead of like forfeiting and losing all the cups, you just throw all the cups off the table at your own birthday party.
Ask a friend.
Anyways, that is a great segue for our Curveball album of the week. The Tipping Point by Tears for Fears. 10 songs, 42 minutes long. Tears for Fears are a band.
Yeah, they're a duo that they have been around forever. You know, one of the biggest groups in the, you know, early mid 80s, you know, you had Songs from the Big Chair, you had The Hurting. I mean, everyone knows Tears for Fears for a couple tracks. Everyone Else Over the World, Shout, Head Over Heels, just a couple of really, really fantastic tracks that they had, Mad World, Woman in Chains, so on and so forth. You know, they're a quintessential sound of the early 80s, you know, and I mean, they're very, very good. But they haven't released music in quite some time, I believe. I mean, I actually think they had an album maybe in, what was the last one, in like 2004 or so. So it's been, you know, nearly two decades from their last actual album release. So, but going into the music, it's 10 songs, 42 minutes long, so it's pretty concise for what it is. But it's interesting to hear, you know, a super group from the 80s to make an album in 2022 and see kind of how their sound evolves, some of their ideas that are stuck in the past, and some of their ideas that you can tell that they're trying to move forward in a way. Some hit and some don't. So going into it, the opening track, No Small Thing, it's, to me, kind of sets it up on the wrong foot for it. I actually do not totally like the placement of No Small Thing. I think it's actually a good track.
I will trade all my liberty for that look in your eyes. Reason.
I would have put it somewhere else in the album, not as an album opener. I do not like it as an opener, but it grew on me on my second listen and third listen. When I just listen to the track by itself, I like it. But I do not like the way it sets up the album. But so it's just not a good way to start, but it's a decent track for it. Because the rest of the album, there's actually a lot of good ideas and different things, sounds and stuff that they were trying to do, which are interesting. So The Tipping Point, second track, which you get like a modernized beat that they used in the 80s. So here's an interesting thing, right? We have a lot of group, you know, indie groups, indie bands, musicians, so on and so forth, that are influenced by the 80s, right? Influenced by sounds that Tears for Fears, we, you know, them, New Order, a bunch of other groups that are really, you know, made. And now a lot of people are like trying to do different styles of it. And The Tipping Point is, you know, one of the OGs doing it in 2022. And it's interesting to hear how the way they did it, it's more rhythm-based than a specific sound. So the way, like, a lot of indie bands will make, like, something where it's like, oh, this sounds like it's from the 80s. It's a specific synth sound that they use, specific instrument they use, the core keyboard or whatever, where they can program it to make it sound like 80s. And like Neon Indian does this a lot. Not saying it's bad, but that's, you know, the way they do it. But for Tears for Fears, the tipping point, it sounds like a throwback to the 80s. It's all in the rhythm. The way it's done, the way you can feel it groove, the way you can hear it sound. But they try to modernize it a little bit. So it's, this is like a border track for me of Uncle Rocky, but it gets enough because so many people have tried the sound to try to modernize it. And I'm like, this is an interesting way of doing it if people actually made the sound. So I just thought that was a really interesting correlation between that when I heard it. I was like, this feels like a throwback song, but it's modernized enough to fit in this decade, this millennium.
I love doing this podcast for you for reasons of like the way you describe do it, like certain songs and music like this, because that's what I couldn't say, but like that's what I'm really feeling, that it's the rhythm basis of this kind of rock that, yeah, Tears for Fears didn't necessarily pioneer, but like a major part of it in the 80s, right?
Super
and yeah, and then you feel that in a lot of these tracks, especially near like more the end. But I couldn't agree with you more that No Small Thing is such a weird way to start the album. And I think, like, I'm happy that this album's only 42 minutes because you get a good sense of what they're doing and it doesn't draw out too long. Even though there are a lot of things on here I don't like, and there are a lot of things on here I find like it's a fairly cool idea that's going on here. But I think the album just has I think it has cohesion. I think it sounds like it's all part of a project, it's all part from a band. But it doesn't have that kind of thoughtful picking of song order that I would have appreciated to maybe get into it. Because, yeah, like, having No Small Thing as the first song, I think sells itself short.
Yeah, exactly, because there's so much more substance in here. Example, Long, Long Time, the third song, right? It's interesting to hear them take a modern kind of sound the way they did it, like this vocal that kind of pops in that you hear with a lot of like electronic artists, like Traverses, I like to call them, that Traverses do a lot. And you hear that, but then to hear them do it in their way, it's very interesting that the way that they did it, and it actually ends up being a really cool song and a cool track for it. That would have been a really good opening track, actually, as a long, long, long time. I thought like that would kind of really suck you into the album to hear, oh, hey, this is what we got to offer. But so that's, I think that might be my biggest gripe of the record. But yeah, towards the middle of the album, Break the Man, my Demons, Rivers of Mercy, I think are all good. But sometimes they could feel a little off, a little bland. Break the Man, I like. My Demons, I'm okay. Some of these ideas of them, you know, trying to like update their sound a little bit just didn't quite fit. It's like My Demons, I thought that just didn't fit well for it. But overall, as a project, towards the end, you had more of like the rhythm sounds that you can hear, like interesting beats and stuff to make it kind of modernize it. Like, example, kind of skip ahead, but End of the Night, the second to last track, you have this really cool electronic sound that's kind of like going back and forth, and it reminded me a lot of then you have the rhythm of it, which not a lot of these people do, try to have it like a throwback sound, and it worked in that way, and I actually really like that track because of how it sounds.
Yeah, End of Night was one of my favorites as well.
Yeah, it's actually a very, very good track. The way they did it, I like how some of these tracks played out, but again, I wish these were like moved around the album to make it fit better, because the way it's just flown just doesn't flow very well. Like, example, I would have loved to have Long, Long Time, Long, Long, Long Time, and End of the Night back to back. Like, that would have been such a really cool mix right there. So you got you know, or even like the tipping point in the night on the one time. Like, if you had those three around, like close to each other, it would have been great because you had old ideas, new ideas, and a mixing up of all three put into it. And yeah. So there's, I mean, you know, group that have been around since the early 80s. It's a very good effort because, you know, we have had a lot of Uncle Rocky sounds on here. You know, a Flaming Lips, I'm looking at you because that was awful. and like, you've had other groups that have done very well. I mean, you had Dove's project, because last year, I like to say that was fantastic. You have some groups that can do this, and I actually really want artists who are influenced by the 80s, you know, have a lot of these 80s throwback stuff to listen to this record, because I want them to get influenced. You know, it's not just specifically a sound that you can do to throw back, you know, even like the funk guys, you know, Silk Sonic, you can get ideas just from rhythm.
Yeah.
Just
it's not
based on that, and you can do so much with that.
80s sound isn't all synthesizers and drums either.
It's
also
not.
And then that's what the 80s throwback sound is getting to, and more in State of Music 2020, I'm over it.
Exactly. Like, there are guys who are very, very good at doing it, and I'm like, okay with them doing it more, but there's so many people that are tapping into it, and they just... It gets to be bland after a while. It's kind of like the same thing with the TikTok, the indie pop sound as well. But more on that, you know, in a future episodes. But overall, with the tipping point, I thought it's a decent project from them. There's a lot of good sounds on here. I don't like the way it's thrown together in that way. But production wise is good, and for, you know, a group that have been around for that long to, you know, not release something for almost 20 years, I didn't know what to expect. I honestly expected just to go into this just not wanting to do it. It's like, don't ruin Tears for Fears for me. But I go, actually, I really respect him for doing this, and there's a lot of good in here. So
yeah,
it's not easy to continually make music for 40+ years. Like, it's fucking hard to do.
And have the self-awareness to be able to make it progress along the way.
And the other thing too is, right, they made, with the lyrics of it too, like, there are some things that are pretty political in here, and Tears for Fears have been a political band, a political group since their inception, right? So, you know, I give them lean way, like, y'all can be as political as you want because you've been doing it since the 80s. Like, they talk, like, you know, Shout and
Everybody Wants to Rule the World, anyone? But, yeah.
Yeah, it was literally about, you know, state of like East and West and East Germany especially and stuff, so a lot of interest in seeing that in myself. But anyways, yeah, I thought of a pretty good project. So something's missed the head on the nail, but the nail was driven in.
Good analogy. Unfortunately, nails and driving is not the arbitrary scale this week. Donda's two stem players is I will rank this an iPod with old Kanye on it.
Ooh. Ooh, shit. Okay, but what old Kanye are we talking about? Like when he still did the bear thing, Kanye?
Yes, but the first one. Like the debut first Kanye.
The debut, yeah. Kanye, so, okay. It's something Dropout, right? I can't think of the name of it.
I'm going through it because it's been... I want to say there was one that came before... Oh, yeah, College Dropout. I want to say there was like a mixtape that came before College Dropout, but...
Probably was.
Yeah, all I would say this is that.
All right, I like that. This is... Okay, this is an iPhone 3GS that's broken half screen and the button doesn't work, so you have to use like the side button or like the touch button program that Apple gave you at the time, but they don't anymore because Apple fucking, Tim Cook hates you. That is filled with two songs on Graduation, and that's it.
Yes, I was looking for the mixtape name. It's the Get Well Soon mixtape.
There you go. Yep.
There you go. That was released in late 2002. And
damn.
Yeah, that on a little iPod Nano, the old school ones. Right.
Mine is Stronger and I Wonder are the only things on your broken iPhone 3GS.
No streaming back then. It was just
no streaming back then. No. Clean house, clean house.
You got it done with 8 gigs, man.
Dude, they might delete your music thing because, you know.
Yeah. Since we're doing a little bit of throwback, we always like to end on your face on a fun note. Anyways, Daft Punk celebrated the 25th anniversary of Homework, their debut album, as well as their, you know, the 1 year anniversary of them breaking all of our collective hearts and announcing that they're no longer going to be an active band. They actually did a live streaming on Twitch of their 1997 maskless performance of like a Homework live, essentially.
Basically, if you know Daft Punk Alive 1997, which I have the CD of it, it is scratched to fucking hell, but I have an OG CD of that because that's me. It's that set plus another like 30 minutes. Because the set is, you know, of Alive 97 is maybe like 45 minutes, and it has my favorite rendition of Alive. But this edition is so cool because it has Fresh live, which Fresh is a track off of Homework. One of my favorite tracks off of Homework. And Toma is doing the keyboard the whole time on Fresh, and it is so fucking cool. I loved it. It's really, really cool. So Daft Punk heads will love it.
Yeah.
But also, 25th anniversary of Homework is insane.
That makes me really feel old. I definitely didn't, like, it's not like I bought Homework, like, as a one-year-old out of the womb or anything, but, like, Homework was the first album I purchased, I remember, like, as a kid.
Discovery was the first one I purchased.
Yes. And, folks can check out on YouTube, actually, the Daft Punk bonus episode where we go into the history of Daft Punk. We go into records. We did this about this time last year, actually, to commemorate. I don't think it's available anymore for the podcast audience because now older episodes for podcasts are for Syndicate 23 members only. So join.syndicate23.co for that. But on YouTube, it's still up, and it should stay up there, I think. And it's a really good episode. It is. I remember including some photos in there of like old Daft Punk that I didn't even see before that were just gems to make. And it was one of those really emotional episodes to produce and edit because I was like after the Doom one where we were like saying goodbye to artists we had just like been formative with. So definitely check that out. It's like Sean was saying, it's on YouTube here. They're like whack-a-mole. They're going to keep taking it down. They're going to keep putting it back up till the end of time.
Literally. So you will find it. There are ways. People record it.
Yeah. But that has been Audio Face. That has been your week of music news and music culture that mostly matters. This is Dan and Sean. And that's tomorrow. And that was it for us today. I 200 episodes in, and I still don't know how to outro one of these. Audio Face Pod can be found on Twitter and Instagram at Audio Face Pod. Go to youtube.com/AudioFacePod for all of our videos. We're uploading new videos pretty much every single day. Reach out with us, interact with us. We can find new music to let us know how you think of our reviews or what music you want us to review, all of that kind of fun stuff. You can find Sean on Twitter at SW Suarez and on Instagram at SW Suarez. You can find me on Twitter at Dan from the Web, on Twitch at Dan from the Web occasionally, on Instagram at Dan from the Internet, on TikTok on Dan from the Internet occasionally. And we will see you next week with the State of Music 2022 conversation. Should be really interesting. Should be really interesting. Cheers.
Toodaloo.